back to Comp 33511. We're at Chapter 10, by my notes, The Principles of Effective Experience. And this is really brackets accessibility. I'm calling it effective experience because I'm adding more things to this than just particularly accessibility as it's known outside of this unit. You'll also see accessibility summarized as A11Y, which means A for accessibility, Y for the Y at the end of accessibility, and there's 11 characters between A and Y. You'll also see this for I18N, which means internationalization as well. And I'm using accessibility, or certainly effective experience here, to also cover things like internationalization and language, speech, those kind of things as well, which typically don't necessarily come under the standard accessibility remit. One thing you should also realise is that there's often seen as being this kind of mindset of being, oh, poor people with disabilities who need accessibility technology. The reality is that, first of all, this is typically, there's a typical two-flow, there's a flow between people with accessibility issue needs and then back to the wider community. So this is not the case where it's only, where we only need to look at people with accessibility issues in a sort of context whereby we provide accessibility and they consume it. They also, there's also a flow of information that's very useful back to people to the wider Western community, if you like. And this is also the case with aspects of developing regions and the kind of ways that people in developing regions have to come up with innovative solutions to computational problems that actually we can use in the West as well. And you'll see that written in the first few pages of this chapter. Now, barriers. There are a number of barriers to effective use. Okay, so we might have things such as visual impairment. So therefore, visual impairment means that what it actually means is that people in general aren't able to see, and so therefore they have a problem looking at the visual data. Now we know that vision represents quite a big amount of cognitive or neurological hardware, if you like, and so therefore there's lots of parts of the brain that are needed to process vision, and so therefore it's a pretty big issue. Now what you've got to realize is that most people who are visually impaired, or known as being or defined as being blind, can see some things. They're not profoundly blind, whereby they can't see anything. Generally, this just means that they have a 2400 visual acuity. Further, we think about cognitive impairment. So therefore, with people with learning difficulties, are they able to perceive information? Is the information simple enough to be perceived? Is the information coherent? Is it easy to understand? That's something else we need to understand when we're UXers. Hearing impairment, likewise. So generally, if people are deaf or hard of hearing, then you will also realize that that there needs to be pretty much accommodations made. Now, we might think this is closed captioning, and that's certainly one way of doing this, and transcripts, which is another way of doing this. But you also should realise that people who are deaf, their first language is not the written language. It is sign language, whichever flavour that might be. And maybe it's American Sign Language, British Sign Language, this French Sign Language, the sign language for different countries. And so generally their first language is not standard, if you like, UK English. It is sign language, British Sign Language if you're in the UK. there's lots of work going on to be able to translate into sign language text in a reasonably coherent way, but unfortunately the research isn't very, it's not had the same leaps that closed captioning has, speech to text and transcripts have. So generally it's still not good enough. We also have physical impairments, and I think that's quite straightforward to understand what those are. Now, we also have things such as situational impairments, whereby you are impaired by the situational context of use of the device. So that might be that you're on a tube, that's the tube train or a bus that's jiggling around, and therefore it's very much as if you might have, say, bradykinesis if you've got Parkinson's disease, where you've got tremors, for instance. And so therefore there needs to be some way to kind of sort that out. A big thing for me is a combinatorial impairment, where in reality this in the accessibility literature is called aging, but actually what it means is lots of small issues across most of the other impairments, or some of the other impairments in combination together. And I think that sort of saying that this is based on aging is not particularly useful, because when does aging occur? When are you aged or when are you not aged? So I don't think that's particularly useful. The reason why it's typically used is because you can get more funding if you say it's for aging, but the reality is it's combinational impairments, in my opinion. We also have aspects such as literacy and also developing regions, and then there's also more wider based exclusions. Okay, so these might be disenfranchised groups or communities or citizens, whereby they don't have access to the kind of technology and technical expertise that we would expect or hope people would have. This can affect their educational outcomes, and so therefore people need access to technology so that they can reach their full potential in that way. Now, there are a few ways in which technology has been created to address accessibility issues. So there's the Microsoft Active Accessibility Framework, which is part of the Microsoft framework, which allows us to understand things like the titles of windows, what window is overlapping another window, where the buttons are, what's active, what's not active, etc. This has been subsumed to an extent by iAccessible 2, which is not just Microsoft, but it is also wider work that seems to span most of the platforms now. However, there are also things called interface bridges. Now, these interface bridges are used as extensively for things like Java or for interpreted languages as opposed to pre-compiled native languages. And these interpreted languages need some way to translate the accessibility requirements of the language or the interpreter to the native system and vice versa. And so these are called accessibility bridges. And here we can see that there's an example of a Java accessibility bridge. Now, there are a number of principles that you should be thinking about. This is the more important part here of effective user experience. So, in the wider accessibility world, these are called POR. So, perceivable, operable, understandable, and robust. Now, I don't hold with just these. I think some of these are just obvious, like, is it robust? Should your work stand up? Should it not fall to pieces? Should your work not have bugs through it? Yes, it shouldn't. So, I don't think we need to be overly prescriptive about this in the context of accessibility. However, The things that I think are important are to facilitate openness, so that therefore other pieces of software can interoperate with yours. So specialist software can interoperate with your specific software, so that therefore it's easier for screen readers, for instance, if you're visually disabled. You should facilitate perceivability. So can the information be perceived appropriately? So therefore, is it fully described? Is there nothing implied? So for instance, if you can't see the error message, are you conveying that there's an error message through colour? If you are, then it's not perceivable. If you're saying this is an error, then that's explicit. So you are making that perceivable. Operability, can people use what you're actually producing, or is it something where you're using specialist hardware that you have to make provision for? Is it understandable? So does it take a lot of cognitive cycles to be able to understand what is going on? And also, I think flexibility is important as well. So generally, even though you might not want to go to the full level of openness where a new specialist piece of software is created, we can facilitate or allow flexibility so that you can do things like reskin or an application, or that you can change the hotkeys or change the shortcuts so that it just means that people can set that system up to work specifically for them because they know their own requirements. So in summary, I think that what's most important here is that we think about accessibility as more than just accessibility. It includes things like developing regions, it includes things like literacy, it includes things like combinatorial impairments, sort of aging, as it's known. It's not just the stuff that you think about when you think about accessibility and disability. You should also realise that in the context of user experience, there's a phrase in the disability community, and that is nothing about us without us. And so therefore, you should make sure that you include people with different needs and requirements into your user experience when possible, so that you get a full understanding of what's required across the piece. Okay, and with that, I think we're done with accessibility, and we'll move on to the principles of efficient experience and usability in the next one.